Orthodox Easter to all those celebrating today.
And a happy Easter to you.
Thanks. Thanks. Greek Orthodox celebrating Easter today. Russian Orthodox, Serbian, Ukrainian. Anyone, Eastern, if you are Eastern Orthodox, today is...
today is Easter for
today
you.
Today is Easter. So, and that's the traditional song that's played, the song which is chanted and sung in Greek Orthodox churches at midnight this morning. At right at the crack of midnight, everyone sings this. It means that Christ has risen. So it's a big big traditional deal. Plus, as Shwani, as you know, you've heard me say many times, we get the Easter candy at half price.
I was about to mention that, but I didn't want to be... I would let you do that, because that's your joke.
Yeah, that's
kind of... And that's the one that your mother says. That's not
the one
funny.
My mother says that's not funny. That's not funny. I don't know why you tell that joke all the time. It's not funny.
That's clever.
It's not funny. I was in Walgreens earlier this week, and
it really was on sale.
They had an aisle. They had a full aisle of Easter candy and signs. There must have been 50 signs, you know, taped to the shelves. Easter candy 50% off. So I took a picture of it and sent it to every Greek person that I know.
Said, see, I'm not kidding.
And my mom doesn't, you know, it would take her, you know, like 3 hours to figure out how to get a picture of that I may have texted her. So I didn't, but I will show her today, and she's going to go, that's not funny. I don't know why you continue to tell that joke. It's not funny.
But it's 50% off, and it is now your Easter.
Hey, 50% off a chocolate Easter bunny.
Take advantage of it.
I'm not gonna thumb my nose at a 50% off a chocolate Easter bunny.
I didn't see any bunnies running around yesterday. Everybody was taking cover.
Yeah, it was a mess.
Animals, people.
Horrible.
To make matters worse, the traffic light at Chicago Avenue and Lakeshore Drive was out.
Oh,
so right around 12:30 yesterday.
So that was causing some extra.
That was a lot of fun.
Honestly, the only thing that made the day worthwhile for me with the crummy weather was hearing it was a television reporter, you know, and everybody had their reporters out in the miserable weather because otherwise you wouldn't know that it was miserable outside unless you sent an actual human to go stand in it to put them on television. And when that person said that it's snowing, it may be wet outside. That made my day.
That you were on the floor with
all
that
completely
one.
Worth it. All yep. the slush, all the slush falling on my head, everything. It's like, oh boy, that's a gem.
Now there is something for you to do on TV on one of the morning shows some morning. When we have the next time we have the heavy wet snow.
Yeah.
You can stand outside without a hat.
Ugh. Ugh. You just sent a shiver down my spine just saying that. Miserable. Miserable.
Yeah.
And like I said before, the worst part was I was in short sleeves the day before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was working around the house. I had shorts
like
on.
Like I said, beautiful sleeve. Afternoon. Yeah, gorgeous afternoon.
That's when I was out at that Hamilton exhibition.
Hey, that looks great.
Well, the exhibition, I didn't actually get a chance to walk through the exhibition, to be honest with you, but everybody's raving about what's inside. I will tell you this, to get to it is a little bit of a chore.
Is it?
You remember what it's like. When's the last time you were actually on the museum campus?
Museum campus here in Chicago?
Yeah.
Friday afternoon.
Were you there for the Hamilton exhibit?
No, I was out there just taking in
you
the
were taking pictures
wonderful
out there.
Afternoon out there.
Well, you were very close to the...
But I was close to it, yeah.
Oh. Yeah. But, you know, to get out there, I hadn't actually been out there for quite a while, where Meigs Field used to be, where the...
Northerly Island, yeah.
Adler Planetarium, the Northerly Island Pavilion's there, the Shedd Aquarium, the Field Museum is right around the corner. But that particular... It's almost like a cul-de-sac, where that long driveway where you go down to the Shedd Aquarium and then you turn to go to the planetarium, and it's sort of
you turn south there.
Yeah And this Hamilton exhibition is sort of between the planetarium and the ghost of Meigs Field.
Yeah, I know where that is.
And the building's still there, that old terminal that used to be Meigs
Field. That's a cool building.
The terminal
too,
is still there.
Yeah.
But that's basically where the Hamilton exhibition is, and it's one lane of traffic going in both directions. It's very, very very limited parking back there. They say that they're going to run shuttles. They've got to do something because, you know, when people are going to be going out there in mass, it's going to be complete pandemonium.
And you know it's going to be very popular.
Of course.
Given the popularity of the show.
Yeah, of course. Of course. That's where I was when I interviewed Lin-Manuel Miranda, who, of course, wrote Hamilton the musical. I've had many, many lovely conversations with him. Super nice guy. And super generous and charitable toward others. As long as the Hamilton musical has been going, he's been getting students in, Chicago Public School students, and he's done it in New York and other cities where Hamilton is playing, where there are free tickets for school students, so they can come and see, and they can learn the Hamilton story in a language, you know, that they really understand best, this R&B and hip-hop show that is spectacular and is continuing to sell out. But he's doing the same thing with this exhibition, where school groups can, you know, come and see it and experience it. You know, so he doesn't have to do that. You know, he can make tons of money selling tickets. And it's not a cheap ticket, by the way. It's like $40 or something to get a ticket for this. It's not inexpensive. But nice that he is making it available to students as well, to school groups and so forth. I think the world of him. He's super talented, and his heart is in the right place, you know, with a lot of that.
I think he's very enthusiastic also about the fact that a person who's not as well known in history as George Washington or Abraham Lincoln, Alexander Hamilton, is getting all of this attention. And, you know, what this person did, you know, for the founding of the country, it's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, and you know, what's really interesting to me is that what we see in Hamilton the musical is so applicable to what is going on in the United States right now. All the principles that the founding fathers worked so hard on to make sure are now being tried and tested of, you know, what kind of democracy that we're living in. And the speech last night, did you listen to the speech that Ron Chernow did at the White House Correspondents' Dinner last night in Washington?
I've seen bits of it here, but I haven't heard the whole thing.
When you get a chance, it's like 20 minutes. You know, give it a listen. He is the historian that wrote the book that Hamilton the musical is based on. He wrote the biography of Alexander Hamilton, and Lin-Manuel Miranda read that and adapted that into his musical. So instead of the White House Correspondents' Dinner being, you know, having a comedian as the host, like they always have, they had this historian last night. And it was so interesting talking about how presidents through the, it's, you know, they tried to focus on the First Amendment last night. Anyone not in favor of the First Amendment? I don't think so. I think whatever side of the political aisle you're on, we're all in favor of the First Amendment. He was talking about how, from the beginning, from George Washington, there has been an adversarial relationship between the president and a free press, which is so vital to our democracy. Yep. A free press is part of our system. He talked about George Washington. He talked about Thomas Jefferson.
I was going to say Jefferson wrote about that at length.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He talked about Teddy Roosevelt. He talked about FDR. He talked about John F. Kennedy, Nixon. It was fascinating, these little stories that he had of the relationship between the press and the president. And, you know, related it back to what we're going through right now, and, you know, maybe the most adversarial relationship ever between the press, a free press, and a president, and what's happening in the world right now. It was fascinating. It's worth 20 minutes of your time to listen to that and learn a little something. It all kind of ties back in together again. You know, it's this Hamilton, when I saw it, the first time I saw it, you know, it hit me over the head like a ton of bricks. Like, this is about what's going on in the world right now. This is exactly what's going on. So, you know, it's that. And the music is great. And the performances are amazing. And I think that's why Hamilton is this worldwide sensation that, everyone's appreciated. And now that they've spun the show off into an exhibit like this, I can't think of any other show that's ever, you know, that was a popular theatrical production or even movie that has spun itself off into basically a museum-like exhibit. You know, that just, you know, that doesn't happen. You know, that never happened, as Schwani say, with the incredible Mr. Limpet.
No.
They never turned that into a museum.
Legitimate question, though. Is this going to be a traveling thing? Is this going
eventually,
to go
yes.
yeah, elsewhere?
Eventually.
I would think it would.
They haven't said how long it'll be here in Chicago exactly. I guess that'll depend on what kind of money it turns in. But the plan is to take it around the country. And they even said that they were thinking about opening it in London. You know, so that'll be interesting to see how mm-hmm. that is received then. This Ron Chernow last night, he was talking about Alexander Hamilton himself. And one of his funny lines was, you know, and Alexander Hamilton was an immigrant. Good thing he got into America before we were all filled up.
Oh,
referring to Donald Trump talking about how we have no room for immigrants anymore because we're all filled up right now.
Oh,
it's a pretty funny line. Let's take a little break. We're going to get to, oh, by the way, the one-on-one interview with Lin-Manuel Miranda being about 20 minutes or so. So we'll get to that first things here. Got a couple of pieces of business, a few things to do. Do we have a good far-flung forecast for today?
We have a musical far-flung
really?
Forecast, and we're celebrating an anniversary today.
Should I prepare to sing?
Yes, prepare to sing.
Okay.
Indeed.
I better go take some lessons between now and then.
Yeah, me too.
We'll get to all that coming up next. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN.
I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot.
One of the signature songs from Hamilton the Musical. Been here in Chicago, believe it or not, now for 3 years. The Tony Award-winning epic going strong in New York, San Francisco, and other cities. And as of yesterday, officially opened Hamilton the Exhibition out at Northerly Island, a museum-like walkthrough the size of a football field where you can go through and see and learn more about the life of Alexander Hamilton and the Founding Fathers, the birth of America, and actually see some artifacts as well. On Friday afternoon, we talked with Lin-Manuel Miranda, the creator of Hamilton the Musical, about his musical, about the exhibit, and he was with David Korins, who we talked with last week on the show, who is actually the creator of the exhibition itself.
Is this like an opening night for you guys? Because the ribbon will be cut today at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, it's a cross between an opening night and a soft opening of a restaurant, because I know what it's like for me and our creative team to walk through here. We don't know what it's like for 75 people at a time to walk through here. So we're going to learn and keep tweaking as we go, but it's... I walked through it for the first time last night. I think it's extraordinary.
A little bit mind-blowing when you walk through here, because what, I mean, this is my, you know, one or two sentence description. If you're familiar with Hamilton the Musical, this brings it all to life, explodes it, the real life of Alexander Hamilton, the history of our founding fathers and the country that really, David, you have created.
Well,
what people will watch.
I mean,
through.
I created it with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds
of the credit, David. Take all the credit, David.
By the way, welcome to my house. No, I mean, listen, we've been trying to figure out how to describe it. I would say the best version is a 360-degree, completely immersive, deep dive down the rabbit hole in order of Hamilton's life, you know, from his 12-year-old post at the Trading Post in St. Croix all the way through to... becoming, you know, Secretary of the Treasury, and then his eventual legacy. So, I mean, it's like you get to see, well, you can see, we're in a world completely surrounding you all the way around.
Recreations, actual artifacts, I mean, people who have gotten into Hamilton as a result of the musical can kind of live and breathe it up close and personal. Could you have ever possibly imagined when you penned this little, you know, show that it has exploded on the world that it would evolve into something like this?
No, I hoped we'd get school groups. That was really about as much of an insurance policy as I had in my head. I was like, I think history teachers will like it, and I'm really proud of it. But one of the things, we realized two things as soon as we opened at the public off-Broadway. One, everyone who left the show told five people about it, which is the thing you hope for the most when you spend 7 years writing a show. And two, everyone said, this is such a potentially teaching moment for kids and people of all ages about our history. And so, to that extent, this exhibition represents another at-bat. These are all the things I couldn't fit in the musical because I'm writing songs that rhyme at every moment.
Right.
I only have 2.5 hours of your time. You can choose your own adventure in this room. If you want to just go through Hamilton's things, you can do that. If you want to take a deep dive on any topic, there are ways to do that through triggered audio. There's the Battle of Yorktown in this crazy Risk game meets Jumanji. I don't even know how to describe
right.
it. But in a lot of ways, it's David sort of getting another at bat at some of this material and being able to go deeper through an immersive experience than I could in a song and dance.
You talked about, you know, you hope that some school groups would be interested in the show itself, and that's like a thousandfold what your expectations were. But you're also doing something similar with this, so school groups and people who might not be able to afford to come here, as you have so generously done with the show, you're also doing for Hamilton the exhibition, right?
Yeah, sorry, go ahead, please.
No, that was the other exciting thing about doing this is that, okay, so you're a kid who hasn't been able to see the show yet, but your parent and your kids know all the words, or they're studying history on their own because they can't stop singing that song about King George. This is an amazing place to take them that is cheaper than the show. It's a deep dive into the thing, and you're also getting a symphonic experience of the score. So the way in the show that those reprises come back to make you feel things, that also happens in this exhibition. You will hear the hurricane played by a full orchestra while you are in the room that depicts the hurricane, and you're also able to do those deeper dives that your kids are already asking for because they have these songs stuck in their heads.
Yeah. So, David, be a proud papa here. Are there places or moments in Hamilton the exhibition for which you are most proud?
I have to say, I thought as we were conceiving it that certain rooms would be my favorite. As we complete each gallery, there are moments within it. This is me saying, being as a proud papa as I am, I'm not going to pick my favorite child. You're not going to get that on camera.
Nor my favorite song.
But I got to say, you know, there are moments in every single one of the galleries that I feel have been rendered to a really exquisite level. The craftsmanship in this thing is beyond what I could have ever imagined. You sort of, you know, ideas are a dime a dozen, but the execution of them is everything. And this is the highest level craftsmanship I've ever seen. So there are moments in this thing. This room that we're standing in is a completely kinetic, three-dimensional sculpture. There are ropes moving under your feet, over your head, on either side of the wall, in, you know, behind. We have a map just off camera of the original 13 states moving, expanding, and contracting, which I put on paper and said, oh, this would be so great to do.
Yeah.
Counterbalance with, you know, the horrible reasons why we either did or did not unite as the states. And here it is moving before our eyes. It's pretty remarkable that we pulled this thing off.
I have to think this is a little bit of a dream come true for you. As a set designer, I mean, you designed the set for the Oscars most recently, for Hamilton, for so many other shows, but those are, you know, those are on stage.
Yeah.
Is this the biggest thing that you've ever done? The biggest, most expansive, interactive thing that you've ever done?
This is by far the biggest effort in my career. But I have to say, when Jeffrey, Lynn, and Tommy, our show's director, came to me and said, we want to go deeper and wider with the show. Here's what we want to do. We want to set a high watermark. We want to try and make this thing an immersive walkthrough thing. We all agreed if we're gonna do it, we want to try and really do it to the best of our abilities. And what we do is tell stories. And what we do is bring worlds to life. And so they had me at, hey, we wanna? And then I said, yes. And they said, what are we gonna do? And then they said, what we want to do is go deeper. And so we took 2+ years trying to figure out how to dimensionalize some of these things. I have to say, you know, working on this has really given me a new appreciation for Lynn's effort in writing the show, because there are so many big, huge, far-reaching ideas, 250-year-old ideas, that still we bump into every day and deal with and reckon with every day, that he was able to do in 3 lines. You know, and I didn't, as the set designer of the show, didn't fully appreciate that, but the level of museum rigor that we had to do to create this, and then the kind of, you know, muscles that I had to flex in my mind to try and figure out what he was able to do with his own pen is insane.
Yeah.
You know, this guy, he got the Genius Award for a reason.
Yeah. One of my favorite things to do, Lynn, is to follow you on Twitter and just read your just, you know, sparks of whatever interests you for that day or that moment. One of the things that I enjoyed most is when you do things with your kids.
Yeah.
I was watching, I think, your son singing Happy Birthday. Uh-huh. That was adorable. I'm wondering, are your kids like the greatest junior experts on Hamilton alive?
Or no
idea. Are they completely disconnected from
it? No, my oldest son actually saw the show for the first time in Puerto Rico when I was performing in it. He had seen Act 1 when he was 3. You can't really see Act 2 before you're 4.
Right. Right.
And he watched Act 2, and it's really interesting what he latches onto. You know, I think most preschoolers love King George for the same reason they love dinosaurs.
Yeah.
They're like, that guy's got power I don't have.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's in a big King George
phase. He's a little bit cartoonish
like. Yeah, yeah.
He's very Barney-like in a way.
Yeah.
But it's so fun to see your kids, interacting in a way, in a completely different way.
Yeah.
To see the creative apple fell from the tree.
Right. For my kid, Daddy is the guy at the top of the star in the ad. You know, he knows that.
Oh, that's good to know. So here are my ideas for this. Now that you're going to cut the ribbon and this is well open, Hamilton Amusement Park, can that be far beyond? Is that possible? A chain of Hamilton restaurants across America?
Oof, I don't know about all that.
Expand the Hamilton.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I have tasted some of the original recipes from the founding era. Mm. You don't want a Hamilton
You don't
restaurant.
Want a Hamilton burger?
I've had Washington's Pepper Pot Stew. It's really good,
that
but it's also,
doesn't
you know.
Even sound remotely appetizing. Hamilton the Exhibition is at Northerly Island for the foreseeable future. Certainly it'll be here this summer. We'll take a quick break. We'll update news coming up next. Song for the Avengers. 20, your spoiler-free review of the Avengers Endgame.
My spoiler-free review? Oh, I think it's a good show.
Good show?
Yeah.
That's a good show.
It's a good show.
So in other words, you didn't see it?
No, I didn't.
Any plans, any interest?
Not
it's
at this
okay
time.
If you're not.
Not at this time.
Not
I've
your
been
kind
hearing
of movie.
A lot about it.
Not your kind of movie.
Maybe not. No, I. You know, speaking of movies, very quickly, the movie I'm interested in seeing that opens up this week.
Yes,
Bolden.
I've heard of that movie. I have not seen it because I've been up to my neck in Avengers coverage.
Avengers,
but
well, you know me. That's my.
It's your cup of tea.
That's my music geekiness showing
that's
through.
That's okay. Yeah, that's okay. There's that.
I'm glad to see there is a movie being made about Buddy Bolden.
Something for everyone out there. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I really like. We're going to have a whole panel of people in to tell us what they think of the movie. All spoiler free. Coming up in about an hour. I gave the movie a Dean's List A. I really loved it on just like every level. And you know, you got to be so careful when you're talking about this movie not to give away anything, because there are some essential things that happen in this movie that you know, you don't want to spoil the ending of for people.
Just like the ending of things like Game of Thrones, The Sopranos.
You got to be careful. Although, you know, a lot of people have been asking about the ending of the movie, and I thought we would just play some audio from the end of Avengers Endgame right now.
Without ready? Giving anything away?
Well, it is. Well, you can judge for yourself.
How are you, tall and handsome? I'm glad you come up to see me.
That's Iron Man. Spider-Man.
Those are my cigarettes.
It's the Agincray! It's the MK!
Mighty Thor.
Ma!
Black Widow.
This is my sister, Cromette. And this is my mother.
Captain America. I'm sorry, I probably shouldn't play the ending of the movie. Like,
oh, you're giving it all away.
You gorgeous mass of muscle.
Oh.
It's so stupid.
Hey, how would you like to come over for some coffee? Fresh? Yes, made this morning.
Made it this morning. So we're going to talk more about events. You know how much it on Thursday?
You just ruined it for me.
Sorry. I warned you that I was going to play the end. You
can't spoiler
say
alert.
Can't say I didn't warn you. The on Thursday, you know, the movie started showing on Thursday night. They started screenings around 5 o'clock. Just Thursday night, the movie made $60
million.
Wow. Yeah, Friday, the movie made $157 million. It also opened all around the world at the same time. And I've got the money right here. In China, on the first day, $107.2 million in its debut there. It broke single-day box office records in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 countries. It broke single-day box office records.
Incredible.
And they say when all the counting is done today that the movie will have taken in somewhere between $310 and $345 million just in the U.S. worldwide. They're saying that this movie will take in $1.1 billion worldwide.
Well, that breaks all the records. And to think we had a snowfall total record.
Right, right. Here's a little more of the ending of Avengers.
Oh, if only we could
this
see
is
this.
After the a hat, madam.
This is after the credits. That's the scene after the credits.
The outtakes that they show.
Yeah, the wacky outtakes. When they have a big, when all the Avengers have a big clay fight. Why, you look as though the sword of Damocles is hanging over your head.
Lady, if you only knew.
Okay, enough of that. 10:19, we're going to talk with meteorologist.
Thank you, Cromet.
And this is my mother. 10:19, we're going to talk with meteorologist Mike Hamernick next. WGN. And as we continue at 10:38, the Weekend Theater is on the air. What's going on stage in Chicago? We are getting ready for a world premiere musical. Here in the Chicago area, we've had those before. Mel Brooks brought a little thing called the Producers here to Chicago before it went to New York. And, oh, may have won more Tony Awards than any show in the history of theater. There's been one show after another that started here in Chicago, as we will have for August Rush the Musical. That is in previews right now at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. You may remember August Rush, the movie that came out in 2007 with a young Freddie Highmore playing August Rush, and Jonathan Riesmeyer was in it, and Kerry Russell, and of course the great Robin Williams. They have taken that basic story, added music to it, and it's going great guns from what I hear. I have not seen it yet because the official opening will be this coming Friday. And I'll be there to see it then, and we'll tell you about it next Sunday. But we are really honored to have the cast, much of the cast, in with us this morning. Let's start off with George Abud, who plays Lewis in the show, August Rush's long-lost father. George, very nice to have you here with us.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Thank you for coming in. And Sydney Shepherd, Lila, who is August Rush's birth mother in the show. Sydney, a pleasure to have you here as well.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
And the two young men who play August Rush, who is in the show, orphan Evan Taylor, and turns into this amazing musical phenom, August Rush. We'll start off with Huxley Westermeyer. Huxley, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
And also Jack McCarthy. And you guys alternate performances, right?
Mm-hmm.
So tell me how, familiar with the movie, how much am I going to recognize from the movie when I come to see your production in this?
What do you say, movie buffs? I've never seen the movie, so
really
you'll have to do the comparison,
really?
And I won't now.
Very, Because it would be too distracting for your performance?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think there's a benefit that I hadn't seen it, so now I'll prolong that.
You kind of make this your own.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
I think that the general spirit of the movie is there, but it's definitely become something very unique. And those who have seen the movie really, I feel like, love and appreciate the music of the movie. And the same man who composed the score for the movie also composed the music for the musical. So that sort of spirit is still there. What do you guys think?
It's a very similar story there. They kept a lot of elements from the main movie. Like, if you've guys seen the movie, there's a slapping scene in the movie that we have kept. And the father-son jam, which is the best to play with.
Yay.
George. And we kept a lot of similar things, but we've made it more a story about trying to find his parents, yes, but it's not like we cut the Juilliard scene and we've cut other similar scenes like that. We just got straight to the point and straight to his journey.
Yeah. I mean, Jack, it's a fairly musical movie anyway, right?
Yeah, and a lot of the instrumental pieces in the movie have been adapted for the stage.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still there, they're just different.
They probably expanded on them.
Yes,
right?
They're
longer. And made them a little bigger, right?
And yeah, and they're more important to the storyline of the musical, so that it's not just your average, like, singing and dancing and acting musical, but there are also instrumental pieces woven in throughout the entire story that help to tell the story of Evan Taylor, the orphan, who is looking for his parents, and he hears the music to find them, and that instrumental music is still there.
Yeah. Talk to me, George, a little bit just about the storyline, the basic plot line of what is happening in this.
Well, the way I've been telling people is that, like, it's about a young orphan boy who's kind of a musical savant, and he hears this music, and there's this music ever present in him. And he's been orphaned his whole life. He's never known his parents, but he has a sense that they're out there and that there is a connection between them through this music that he's hearing in his head. So he sets off to find them, and he sets off to New York to find them from wherever he's coming. And then you get the parallel stories of the parents, which Sydney and I play, from their younger years, and what they were going through when they were in their teenage years, and then where they are when they've lost each other as well. So they're all kind of trying to find each other, and they're trying to find each other through this music. And in the journey, Evan Taylor is kind of oppressed by society and, like, all these factors coming in from, as John Doyle, our director, would say, the goody and the baddie. So we have, like, a kind of a bad character, and we have, like, a light character. We have Hope, and we have Wizard. And they're kind of leading him and tugging him in different directions through his journey, pulling him away and towards his parents the whole time. And then they find each other through this composition that August writes at the end, and they all come together and play it, and then they reconnect.
Yeah, I'm sort of getting goosebumps again just hearing you describe that, because I'm remembering the movie and how moving it was.
The story is very lovely. It's very special, and it's very poignant, and it's unique. It's not, even though it seems very universal, it seems like a very unique story and very special to these circumstances and this young boy.
You guys are part of something, rather special, a world premiere at the Paramount that has won award after award after award after award for their amazing productions that they've always put on. And this is the first time that they're taking on a world premiere. Is that a lot of pressure on you doing something like this? I mean, whether it was at the Paramount or any place, a world premiere musical, it's a pretty big deal for the cast.
Absolutely. And it's an extra thrilling thing to work on something that's new, that's entirely being created with you. You know, I feel like a lot of actors do have the experience of getting a script, you know, for whatever it is, Kinky Boots, and you learn it and you do it and it's fun and wonderful and amazing. But there's an added element of, I guess, ownership as an actor when you're helping build something sort of from the ground up and getting to show it to people for the first time. That's definitely very exciting.
So Huxley and Jack, talk to me a little bit about being part of this process, two young men as yourselves. I assume that you been working on this in New York?
Mm-hmm.
Before you came here to the Paramount to kind of do it in your own theater and in this theater?
Yeah, in January we did a developmental lab for the show, a four-week developmental lab, And then we had a little break in between. And then we went straight to rehearsals in New York. And then we came straight here into tech.
Yeah. How about for you, Jack? You're from New York, you told me.
Yeah. I am. So
it was no big deal for you to be on Broadway at all. Right?
Well, no. But it was. This is my first time doing something really from scratch. I've done revivals and I've replaced other roles. But I've never
What other shows have you been in?
I did a revival of Shadowlands off Broadway, which is about C.S. Lewis, and I replaced the role of Michael in Finding Neverland. But this was really my first time almost creating and
originating a role.
And it was really special just to like watch the entire process and how much it's changed from the beginning and how some things have stayed exactly the same.
Yeah, and Sydney, for you and George, what's the process like for you? You know, launching a world premiere, starting off in workshops and really from the ground floor.
Well, I've had an interesting experience with August Rush because I did a first reading of it in November of 2014.
Wow.
So it's been a piece that's been in the works for a long time, and it's been a character that I've been sitting with for a long time.
Wow.
So it's been sort of a surreal experience jumping into it knowing that people will see it because I've lived with it so long sort of as something inside me. So, yeah.
It seems the true essence of theater, like in making a world premiere or making a new piece, because everything's very prescient, everything's in the moment, things are changing rapidly. Something that you might come and see on Thursday night will never be there again.
Yep.
People are seeing lines, people are seeing ideas one night that they'll only see. And that's what I love about the theater. It's gone in that moment. It's just us. It's me and you that night, and then the next night it's us and somebody else. And that's very moving, and something about making something new like this, and it's ever-changing, and then the next day we're going to have notes, and we're going to add things in, or we're going to hear what John has to say, or what the writers have to say. They're like, oh, we're going to add this line, and then something comes so clear, or something like explodes open just from a few words being added.
Right. Mm-hmm. I remember when Mel Brooks brought the producers here, and I probably saw it about 4 or 5 times before it went to Broadway, and I happened to be sitting near where the director, Susan Stroman, was sitting, and I was almost so distracted from watching the show by watching her feverishly taking notes during the show. And each time that I came to see it, it was different than it was the time before. So that speaks to, George, what you're talking about.
How absolutely.
You think you're seeing one thing, but tomorrow night could be completely different.
And that's you know, what gets you right there.
Yeah, that's theater. Well, and the other unique thing about this show is there is no orchestra in the pit for this show, as I understand it. You are all the musicians.
Yes.
For the show on stage, right? Tell me, what do you do, Huxley?
We play guitar and piano in the show. And it's just amazing being on stage with all the other acting musicians because we all understand everything. And, like, if we're learning new script pages or getting new music pages, we learn it instantly because there's no orchestra, so we all play it on stage ourselves, which adds a completely other element because it's not just people trying to fake instruments. They're actually playing on stage every single night.
Yeah, and I would think, Jack, that you must feel so much more involved in the show when you are the orchestra.
Yeah. As Huxley said, we play guitar and piano, and I knew a little bit of piano, but I didn't really know guitar before we started rehearsals. And I remember on the first day kind of being like unsure about if I was going to be able to play guitar. I knew a little bit, but like we sat down and started learning the music, and we made a joke. This was like the first day of the lab. That was like, it's first day of rehearsal, end of sits probe, all like on the same day.
All on the same
because
day.
We were all learning the music, but we were also playing the music, and it sounded like a full orchestra.
Wow. Sounds like that would be really fun, I would think.
Yeah, in the first hours. And as it went on, I started to learn the guitar, and now it's like crazy just to be doing it every night and to be playing with everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Well, the show is in previews right now, but this morning here, you will hear for the very first time one of the songs from August Rush, the musical, performed when we come back from the break. It's at the Paramount Theater in Aurora through June the 2nd. The official opening night is next Friday. We'll tell you how you can get tickets yourself when we come back in a second on 720 WGN. Today we are talking with the cast of August Rush, the musical. It's in previews now at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. Tickets at ParamountAurora.com, or you can call 630-896-6666, 630-896-6666, or you can go to the box office, or we've got a pair of tickets to give away right now as well. Let's take caller number 7 on our phone line, 312-981-7200. Caller 7 will win a pair of tickets to see the show that will play here at the Paramount through June the 2nd. And you're about to get a world premiere broadcast performance from this world premiere right now. What song are you going to do? And do we need to know a little about what's happening here for all of this to make sense?
Sure. This is a song called Pig in the Moonlight, which is a really, really lovely song that Sydney and I sing as the parents of August Rush when we were younger and we first met and fell in love. And it's a song that I'm telling her about that I wrote when I was a little boy, when I was about their age, and was singing it to a pig. So that's the important thing. I'm singing this to a pig.
You're singing this to a pig.
Yeah.
All right. It's another premiere. We've never had that.
That's right.
Ever on the show either. Here they are from August Rush, the musical. Take it away.
What do you see from where you are? Does it feel close or very far? Do you have daydreams in your pen? Head toward the moon, I'll tell you when. What if the latch became undone? The buried patch is where we'd run. Leave this behind, what we could find. The scarecrow set him free. It's how I pictured it could be. In my mind, what we could find, what we could find. What do you see from where you are?
A dragonfly afraid to fall.
Does it feel close or very far?
A name I can't recall.
Do you have daydreams in your pen?
I don't have time to count them all.
Head toward the moon, I'll tell you when.
Just tell me when.
What if the latch became undone? The very patch is where we'd run. Leave this behind, what we could find. Passing the scarecrow, set him free. Pictured it could be in my mind. What we could find, what we could find, what we could find.
Wow, that is absolutely gorgeous. I can't wait till next Friday now.
We're excited for you to be there.
I cannot wait. Guys, what do you think when they're singing that? What's going through your minds while the show is going on? And, you know, you're not yourself performing or singing at that moment. Go ahead.
It's just so fun being off stage and just listening to you guys sing that incredible song, and really helps get into character because it's an amazing song, amazing lyrics, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Jack?
We get, like, a couple breaks during the show, and that's one of them, and we can just, like, sit backstage and listen.
Yeah. Since you guys alternate, are you both there each night, just not on stage, or do you take a complete night off when you're not performing?
During the other show, most of the time we have tutoring.
But
we still got ring at the show.
Tutoring.
But it's in the basement, so we can still hear.
Oh, so you can still, so you kind of still feel like you're there.
Right under the stage, so we can hear most of the instruments, too, coming down.
Yeah. So are you doing actual homework, you mean? yeah. when this is going on. So a show may be going on and you're doing math in the basement?
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't seem right.
Or grammar.
Yeah, all right. Oh, I guess we have to have those things.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see the show. I know you guys are performing the instruments on stage, but did I hear no intermission in the show? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, some people are texting in saying they saw the show and they loved it. No intermission. How long is the show?
It's about 90 minutes, I'd say.
Nice.
It's definitely 90 or under. It's definitely a wallop in 90 minutes. Like, you're getting a lot, but it flies by.
Okay, I love that.
Hold on to your seats.
If you want to get info, the official opening will be this coming Friday night, but it's in previews right now. And we'll be playing at the Paramount and Aurora through June the 2nd. You can go to ParamountAurora.com. To get more information, or 630-896-6666. Thank you to Jack McCarthy. We appreciate you coming in. Huxley Westermeyer, Sydney Shepherd, Georgia Bood, thank you all very, very much for coming by.
Thank you, Dean.
Thank you.
We'll see you Friday night.
Pleasure.
Yeah. See ya.
Can't wait. We'll take a break for news, and we'll come right back. WGN. You've been living under a rock the last few days. You probably have heard a little movie called Avengers Endgame just opened. Thursday night, the first screenings started around 5 o'clock on Thursday night, and literally screenings in some theaters have been going 24 hours a day and will continue to do so through tonight into tomorrow morning. So not a surprise when the estimated box office numbers for the weekend just came to me. The Disney Marvel Studios just emailed over box office numbers to me. They're estimating that when this day is done, Avengers Endgame will make history with a record-shattering global debut of $1.2 billion. That has never happened before, ever, has never happened. A lot of enthusiasm, obviously, for this, what they're saying is the final chapter of the current incarnation of Avengers. We've got a panel of movie enthusiasts, some of my current and past kid critics joining me today to talk about the movie, but also our pal Pamela Powell, with the Daily Journal and Real Honest Reviews and FF2 Media, who is out on assignment, Pamela, shall we say, right now?
I think that's what we shall say. I'm in Tribeca right now, actually.
In Tribeca. Have you seen anything good there?
I'm just starting to take a look at the schedule and plunge headfirst into the whole realm of the film festival. So yeah. I'll keep you posted.
Anything that's going to make $1.2 billion in its opening weekend?
Probably not. I'm gonna bank on that one, actually. That's just absolutely phenomenal. The numbers just keep going up. I looked at them earlier this morning when I got up, and wow, just blows you out of the water.
It is truly mind blowing this precedent setting box office that's happening. Deservedly so?
You know what? I've got to say, yes. I mean, look at all the fan base that it has already built in. But this film is, I think, and I'm not a superhero movie fan, as I think you might know, but this one I really loved as well. And granted, I have seen all 21 previous movies, too, this time. But I think it really knocks everything out of the park. I don't think there will be one person disappointed in seeing this film. And I'm really nervous about saying anything because I'm scared. I don't want to give anything away because it is so much fun. I feel like saying, yes, there are Avengers in the movie. Yes, it's funny. Go see it. End of story.
it's almost the easiest review in the world to write, isn't it? Because you can't go into as much detail as you might normally go into. With this. But it's something kind of interesting for me, since Thursday, I reviewed it on Thursday, And every single week when I do reviews for movies, there are, you know, the people who agree with my reviews and some people who disagree. It just happens every week. And I would hope it would be that way, that people have their own opinions about things. This week, and not one single disagreement. Everybody,
I take it you liked it.
Everybody has loved. I don't mean that I'm happy that they're agreeing with me. I just find so interesting. There is not a dissenting opinion in the bunch this week. Everyone has loved this movie.
Yeah, it's crazy that, I mean, even people who, like I said, I'm not a big superhero fan. I loved it. I mean, I truly loved it. It's one of the, I think it's the only superhero movie I've ever given 4 out of 4 stars to. And that's pretty incredible.
Yeah,
that's record breaking on my part.
I gave it a Dean's List A. I really like it. I mean, if people follow my reviews, you know, I'm all about story. If there's no story to me, there's no movie. And there is just so much story in this movie. More than just reconciling the events of the previous Avengers movie. This story is so meaningful and thoughtful and heartfelt.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I liked it so much. It was so much more than just wisecracks and explosions and special effects.
I agree. There was an actual, there's so many emotional components with this. And in my sight, it was all about family and that love, and you love each other no matter where you're at. And there was just that emotional complexity and component to it that made it so much more meaningful. And surprisingly so, I never, ever expected to be so emotionally connected to these characters that I was watching. I'm scared to even say any of the Avengers' names because I don't want to give anything away.
I can hear you walking on eggshells right now.
I like to make it out of Tribeca alive, you know?
And I know exactly what you feel. When I was writing my review, I would write it. Oh, I was like, I can't say that. I got to go back. I can't say that. That's too much. I have to go. I must have had like 12 different drafts of my review on this until, you know, and then I read it and reread it and reread it, you know, and thought, okay, I think this is good where I'm saying what I want to say without giving anything. I don't think I gave anything away, I hope.
Yeah, I hope that I didn't. I was half tempted to just do a redacted version of my review and send that in and see what they
That's the Robert Mueller review?
Exactly.
Of it that's very heavily redacted? Okay.
Yeah, still 4 words in there.
I don't know if you were still in town if on television. You know, I was outside the AMC River East Theater on Thursday night.
Oh, okay.
And getting people's, you know, we're doing live reports for WGN TV. And, you know, I'm talking to fans when they come out. Thank goodness we weren't live and we were recording the interviews, because one of the people, now this was a super fan who had just gone through seeing 21 Marvel movies in a row at that marathon that was going on there.
Yeah, this is superhero, all right.
And, you know, people are, you know, telling me about the movie, and one lady comes up and she's telling me, and she blurts out one of the biggest spoilers in the movie. Blurts it right out on camera.
Yeah.
Like, that would be a big old spoiler. We can't, so, you know, we had a bleeper.
Yeah, well, thank goodness you were recording and it wasn't live, like you said. Yeah. That would have been devastating.
But it happens. You know, it's people just, you know, in your enthusiasm talking about the movie, you just, some people get carried away. So that said, we're going to be very careful when we continue to discuss. I'm so happy you enjoyed it. I hope you have. Is the weather nice in New York right now?
It's not too bad. It's not raining right now. It is supposed to rain later, but that's okay. There's a subway and there's a theater, so I think I'll be fine.
You'll be fine. Okay, well, enjoy your time in at Tribeca and the big film festival that's going on there. It's always great to see you. It's always nice to talk to you. Pamela Powell with the Daily Journal, Real Honest Reviews, FF2 Media. We're going to talk to our panel of junior critics here and see what they thought of it all. And open up our phone lines as well, 312-981-7200. And we come back next, WGN. Chicago's best, have no fear. The Chicago's best team has great food and great beer. See what they did there? It's an all-new Chicago's Best Brew Pubs tonight at 10 on WGN-TV. And then tomorrow morning, talking with Kelly Clarkson about her brand new movie. I'll have that for you tomorrow on the WGN-TV Morning News. It's 11:26, and we are talking Avengers. Now, don't worry about spoilers here on the radio. We've got a panel of movie lovers to talk about it. We're going to open up the phone lines and talk to listeners about it. But there will be no, I can guarantee you that there will be no spoilers. Why? Because I have my finger on the delay button, as we call it. And if somebody accidentally goofs and gives a spoiler, I push the button and it'll never get on the air. So you don't need to turn your radios off in fear that somebody may accidentally spill something here. It ain't going to happen. So let me bring in, let's start off with our in-studio critics. And we start off with young Oscar Narrett, who was a kid critic here on the show not too long ago. Oscar, how you doing there, pal?
I'm doing good.
Tell me your age.
I'm 10 years old.
10 years old, and you're a pretty big Marvel fan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're going to get your opinion in just a minute. People who have listened to our show before know kid critic Graham Ambrose. Welcome back to the show, Graham. Nice to have you here with us.
Oh, it's amazing to be back. Oh, I've dearly missed this.
You were so excited about getting ready to talk about this movie, right?
Over the moon. But I do trust you, since I didn't know you had the delay button ready, so...
Well, that doesn't mean you can start spilling stuff, though.
Oh, no.
Don't make Uncle Dean get mad now.
I'm not going to use the delay button.
Yeah, well, we're going to try to do this as spoiler-free as possible. But, I mean, if somebody does make a mistake, we do have the delay button, just in case. And also joining us on the phone... A longtime regular here on the show, Jimmy Rancic, who is now at the University of Illinois, and he's studying film there. Jimmy, good morning to you there, my friend.
Good morning, Dean. Thanks for having me.
And a happy Easter to you as well.
Yeah, Christos Anesti.
Lathos Anesti, back to you. Thank you very much. So let's start off with Jimmy, you know, college student who got up early on a Sunday morning. You got to give him some credit.
I had to make sure I had my full cup of coffee and watch a couple reaction videos on YouTube. But man, is just the community around this movie ginormous. Everybody seeing it, everybody, you know, just getting really excited. I mean, people were cheering and crying and having just very audible reactions to the whole movie. I saw it Thursday night at 10 o'clock, and I have not been, well, not since last year, but I mean, with the stakes that last year's Infinity War set up, there are so many people going to see it, so many people waiting to see what happened, and it is just an experience that I haven't had in the theaters in a long time.
Yeah, I think the Russo brothers, Joe and Anthony Russo, the directors, they made a historic film. They made film history with the way in which they reconciled all of the Marvel stuff that you wanted reconciled in this, along with some really beautiful human stories at the same time, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what I have been in awe of since last year is how they have tied together, and at the time it was probably 18 or 19 movies, so seamlessly together, you know, pulling different parts from several films. You know, just and kind of not even foreshadowing, but just using those other films as turning points to get to where it is, and all together at once. And in Endgame, they show you how they do it better than anybody.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder if you look at this differently now that you know, you're not a snot-nosed little kid sending reviews to me anymore. But now a big-time college student actually making your own projects and films and studying it all. I wonder if you have a different perspective of all of this now.
So, yeah. I mean, you know, anyone who's written a story knows that to tie even just a little bit into just one movie and have foreshadowing from that, it takes a lot of planning out and stuff. And so even just, you know, looking at all these movies, like I was just saying, that wows me. you know, I'm doing a lot of editing of just short 5-minute films and stuff like that. And unfortunately, I'm doing it on a MacBook Air, and my computer wants to blow up. And so I look at something like Avengers that, you know, probably has several, you know, I feel like thousands of people working on the right effects and the timeline and all that. I'm in awe of how they do this more than ever, because yeah, there is so much action. There's so much, you know, computer generated stuff, but I mean, it's in a world where that stuff exists, but I just can't even imagine how you would even start to plan all that. Yeah. It's amazing.
I need to take a break for the news here. You want to hang on?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
All right, we'll get back to Jimmy in just a minute. We'll talk with our other critics as well, and we'll get to our phones as well at 312-981-7200. If you've seen the film, you want to throw your 2 cents in, if you have questions about it. Some people are asking questions. They haven't gone to see it yet, but they're asking some questions about it. We'll answer those all coming up next. WGN. Talking Avengers this morning with some of our favorite kid critics. Jimmy Rancic is live with us from Champaign-Urbana, where he's now studying film. And Graham Ambrose is here, the kid critic. And also, Oscar Narrett is here with us this morning. Oscar, how old are you again?
I'm 10 years old.
10 years old. What was the first Marvel movie that you think you saw?
I don't actually know. Maybe it's Iron Man 2.
Iron Man 2, because you weren't even born yet when the first Iron Man movie with Robert Downey came out.
No, I was actually born.
You were born but like a baby, right? You were newborn. Because that came out like 11 years ago or something like that. Yeah, so it was right on the cusp. Did you like Marvel right from the beginning?
Yeah.
Yeah, the characters. Which ones are your favorite Marvel characters?
I really liked Spider-Man.
Yeah. Are you excited that there's going to be a new Spider-Man movie soon?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me too. And so tell me what you thought of Endgame.
I thought it was really good. It was really amazing. I think it's one of my favorite movies. And, yeah.
Graham Ambrose is here. He is the kid critic, as he calls himself. I think you have a patent on that now, don't you, and a trademark?
Actually, you know what? My dad and I were brainstorming a website to, you know, post my reviews on, like, a safe haven for everything.
Yeah.
I've actually given it the label Kid Critic Chicago.
Oh, good. Are there other kid critics out there that you need to...
Apparently. They took the website name before I did.
Stolen it from you. Stolen it. Anyway. You were pretty excited before the movie opened.
Yeah, but at the same time, I was also shaking with nerve because I read early, not reviews per se, but like early reactions from like tweets from people who saw early press screenings of the movie, and they say they were emotional wrecks when it came out. So
you were anticipating being an emotional wreck?
Oh, yeah. And I wasn't the only one. I saw this movie with my girlfriend, Emma. She was also in the same boat. She was in the same boat I was. We agreed on a simple plot synopsis. The movie begins, it ends, we cried. That's basically the quick summary we were going to give everyone.
Okay. Maybe you can elaborate just a tiny bit without spoilers now, though.
So the plot is that, quick plot, the Avengers have to reconcile from the events of Infinity War, the tragic ending, and it's a 3-hour movie, so they have a lot to clean up after.
I don't think it's a spoiler in any way to say that, because the Infinity War has been out for quite a while, and in it, the villain in the movie, Thanos, destroys half of the living things on Earth. So now, including half of the Avengers. So the surviving Avengers have to figure out, you know, what they're going to do. You know, is it just there's nothing they can do? Is there something they can do? That's where the spoiler part comes in. What happens next is where the spoiler part comes in. But they feel like they've not only let half of the world down, but they've also let their fellow Avengers down. Were you happy with the composure of the movie and how the story was told without getting into any of the spoilery details?
It is the epitome of the word bittersweet. I'll just say that.
Okay, that's pretty succinct, and I think mighty accurate as well. A couple of texters are writing in and saying, do you have to see any of the previous Avengers movies to appreciate Endgame? Jimmy Rancic and Champagne Urbana. Jimmy, what's your take on that? Do you think that you have to have seen the others in order to appreciate this one?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, there is, counting Endgame, I believe 22 in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Endgame feeds off of every single one of them. And so it might be criminal not to. But if you are going to, Infinity War, the Avengers right before this that came out last year around this time, is on Netflix. And I'd say if you're going to watch anything, if you don't have a ton of time, I'd watch Infinity War first.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. In fact, really, my only criticism of Endgame is that I felt like you had to have a super working knowledge of Marvel in order to fully appreciate all the nuances and all the genius references and homages and everything that the directors, the Russo brothers, have put into this movie. It's all great. If you're a Marvel fan, it's fantastic. If you're an average moviegoer, like a lot of the people who are texting in, wondering, are you going to get it? You're not going to be lost, but you're not going to have a full appreciation of what's being put in front of you. Does that sound fair?
Yeah. You know, they go over the stakes of what happened in Infinity War. So even if you haven't seen it, which I really recommend you do before going, they will catch you up. It's brief because I think they get the sense that
yeah, most
you've
people
seen have, most of the movies
yeah,
going
about 20 times. Movie. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, my spoiler-free review is more of a reaction thing too. Because I mean, part of the greatest thing about this is just sharing and feeling the reactions with this community of Avengers fans. So my spoiler-free line is: I felt like I was going through a face acting class. I was reacting to everything. I was feeling emotions, feeling surprise, shock, awe, sadness, happiness, laughter. I mean, my face, I wish I could send a reel into the Russo brothers so I can be in their next film or something.
you definitely want to be part of their genius, that's for sure.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah, let me take a quick break and we'll get to some of your thoughts and comments out there. 312-981-7200. Text or call in if you saw the movie and what you thought of it. 312-981-7200. We'll be back in a second. WGN. It is 11:51, Dean Richards Sunday morning on WGN. The world premiere of August Rush the Musical is now playing at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. It's the Warner Brothers motion picture coming to life on stage that follows 11-year-old orphan Evan Taylor through the New York City streets in search of his birth parents. Be part of history. Be first to see this musical before anyone else at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. It's playing through June 2nd. All tickets are $69 or less at ParamountAurora.com. ParamountAurora.com. We had much of the cast of August Rush the Musical on our theater segment a little earlier today, and they performed a song, world premiere broadcast performance of it. So if you want to hear that interview and hear the song from August Rush the Musical, we'll have that posted up on the site a little bit after the show today. Joining us in studio right now is Graham Ambrose, Kid Critic, KidCriticChicago.com, Oscar Narrett, I was a big Marvel fan. Jimmy Rancic is a film student at the University of Illinois in Champaign right now joining us. Your thoughts on text or on the phone at 312-981-7200. And Graham, talk to me a little bit about your history with the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I have very hazy memories on what my first official Marvel movie was. I think it might have been Iron Man when I saw it with my friends on the way to a birthday party at Six Flags. One of them had a car with a DVD player in it. It was similar to ours. I thoroughly enjoyed it, but back then I wasn't really much of a critic. Later on in that year, I would become like a kind of a movie, I don't want to say critic because I didn't give any scathing reviews or even thoroughly negative ones like
and
I do
And you
now.
Can hand out a scathing review from time to time.
Yeah, I can. Sometimes I even enjoy it.
I always say that writing a bad review is way more fun than writing a good review. There's no question about that.
I thoroughly agree.
Yeah. So do you have favorites, favorite characters in the Marvel Universe?
I would have to say that one of my personal favorites is Tom Holland's Spider-Man.
Hmm.
He captures the youthful innocence of a superhero teenager beautifully. I think more so in a way than Garfield or Maguire. Maguire, in my opinion, was too dopey, and Garfield looked too old to capture a high schooler. He looked like he was 25, which I think he kind of is, or in, maybe in his 30s. I don't really know, but he didn't look like a high schooler. That's all I'll say.
Jimmy, how about for you? What do you have favorites in the Marvel Universe?
I'd have to go with Iron Man.
I think,
Tony. Sorry. Oh, sorry. Did you say Jimmy or Grant?
Yeah, Jimmy, go ahead.
Oh, well, if Grant wants, is it Grant? I'm sorry.
No, it's we're going to talk to you.
Okay, all right. It's been Iron Man. Iron Man came out in, I believe, like May of 2008, and you know my yaya and papu, Greek for grandpa and grandma. They took me opening weekend to see Iron Man 1, and then I remember seeing it again maybe a week or so later with my dad, but my yaya passed away about 4 years ago, less than 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So it was bittersweet seeing this kind of epic point in the cinematic universe, and just kind of having flashbacks to being at the theater with my yaya, who I miss very dearly, and brings another dimension and, you know, like a whole decade that's passed since we sat in theaters together watching it.
Yeah, and your yaya, your grandmother, was a big movie fan. I kind of think
that's... She loved it.
I think that's kind of where you get it a little bit, right?
I think so, yeah. I mean, my dad loved bringing me to movies from a young age, and when he didn't bring me, I'd call yaya and Papu, and they'd bring me, over to Gulf Mill, and we'd go see a movie, and they'd treat me to Sbarro at the food court. So really, I was just mooching, but I will tell you...
And now you're a college student just mooching.
No, yeah, exactly. I will tell you, even up in heaven, she is still scathing mad at you for your negative reviews of Mamma Mia.
She was mad at me. I remember it at some gatherings at your house, and you don't want to get a Greek grandmother cornering you in the house and disagreeing with you on your a movie that was shot in Greece.
That's shot in Greece.
That
Meryl
should have been
Street
enough for an A plus. Yeah. Yeah, sorry.
It should be.
I loved your yaya dearly also, but I have to stand by that review. It's one of the worst movies ever made.
Papu's listening, just so you know.
I love it. We love him too, and I'm sure he may agree with me on that. I'm not sure. Anyway, so ultimately, your favorite Marvel characters? Do you have favorites in this?
Yeah, I'm sticking by Iron Man. I love, his brain. I love his sassy, witty comebacks. I see a lot of myself in that, as you've probably felt the wrath of a few times.
I have noticed that. I have noticed from time to time, yes.
Not talking about Endgame, but so many times before Endgame, he has put himself in the line of fire. Avengers 1 that came out 2012, I believe, he carried a bomb that was set to blow up New York, all the way into space, further past the suit's ability at that point, and he has always taken the hardest hits for the team, in my opinion, and really shown a selflessness, as selfish as his character can act sometimes, and so I see a lot of really great and kind of competing qualities of him that that I mean, it's hard to come by in a superhero.
Yeah, which makes the dynamic that we've seen in several of the movies between him and Captain America so great, and the, mm-hmm. just the relationship between all of the Avengers. This movie just sums it up all so beautifully. We have to break for the news, so I want to thank everybody. Oscar, thank you for coming in, my friend. It's nice to see you. Oscar Narrett, thank you very much. Thank you very much. And Graham Ambrose, Kid Critic Chicago, thank you very much, as always, for coming in. It's great to see you.
Great to be back, Dean.
And my pal Jimmy Rancic out at the University. How's school going out there?
School's going crazy. It's final season. I'm not going to lie. I'm not happy.
Spoken like a true college student. Thanks, pal. We'll talk to you soon. Jimmy Rancic. We'll take a break and update news next. WGN. You were not listening to our theater segment earlier today. You missed a performance. A world premiere broadcast performance has never been on the air before, from August Rush the Musical. That's currently at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. It's going to be there through June 2nd. But we had much of the main cast in this morning, and they performed a song that was beautiful. We'll post that so you can check that out later on. And we've got more tickets to give away for August Rush the Musical. If you would like to go, let's take caller 11 at 312-981-7200. Caller 11. And we'll set you up with a free pair of tickets to go see the show. We're gonna be at the world premiere on Friday night, so next week, next Sunday, I'll be able to give you my review for that. You excited about that, Schwani? You on pins and needles till next week when I can give you the review on that?
Oh, I think it's great.
What do you mean?
Oh yeah, I can't wait.
Were you even paying attention?
I can't wait.
You didn't hear a word I said.
You were giving away tickets.
That's all I heard.
Well, you don't listen. You don't listen to my newscast.
That has nothing to do with this. He heard me give the phone number, and he took a guess that I might be
giving away tickets.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
To a show.
Hey.
Hey.
The CSO strike is over, right?
Yes. They ratified a 5-year agreement yesterday with a vote after none other than Mayor Emanuel stepping
in. I love that. I
bring
in
both sides.
That reminds me of the old Mayor Daley.
Exactly. I was going to say just that.
I love that. I used to love when I was
he would get them together and that strike was over.
He'd get everybody in a room and nobody could leave until the strike was over.
Now, what's the matter with you? You're going to do this and you're going to do this.
We're just trying to settle this strike.
And this is the way it's going to be, and that's the way it is.
That's all we're trying to do. Yeah, nobody's leaving this room till the strike is over. But yeah, I love that Mayor Emanuel did that and got it done. You know, because I was getting worried. I mean, it's you know, not great when there's a labor dispute like that. It benefits no one to get the music back up at Symphony Center. Number one. But the Ravinia season's right around the corner, CSO is a major part of that.
Ricardo Muti is coming back next month to conduct concerts, so they wanted to be on board for that.
Right.
Not only the CSO not performing there, but every other touring performing ensemble that came in, whether it was a orchestra on tour or a small ensemble. Nothing was going on at Symphony Center during this strike period.
Yeah, well, I'm glad they resolved that. Another story, Schwani, that we have not covered with the intensity that we probably should have. Idris Elba is now a married man. Do you know who Idris Elba is?
I know the name.
I'd be willing to bet money that you have no idea who he is.
I've heard of Idris Elba.
He's only People Magazine's reigning sexiest man alive.
I've got to rush out and buy a copy of the magazine now, I tell you. Yes, sirree.
He married model Sabrina Dowry. They got married in Morocco. How about this? They got married at this fancy boutique hotel in Marrakesh. Doesn't that sound romantic?
Mm-hmm.
I'm serious. Doesn't that sound cool?
Wasn't there? Did Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young
Marrakesh
play
Express?
Marrakesh Express.
But you know we're riding
on the Marrakesh Express. All on board.
I think this wedding might have been slightly more romantic than the Crosby, Stills and Nash song.
Okay.
She wore two custom Vera Wang gowns, presumably at different times. And he wore a classic black suit. This is the part that I find very interesting. At this wedding, there was food, drinks, dancing, fire dancers, and camels. Now, how many weddings do you go to where there are camels present?
Well, three of the five items you mentioned, I've been to at weddings. You know, food, drinks, and dancing, yes.
Yeah.
But fire eaters and camels? Nope, haven't seen that.
Fire dancers.
Fire dancers.
Fire dancers. But you may as well eat the fire if you're going to dance with it. What's the difference, really? And camels. Are the camels just... Do the bride and groom get on the camel and they tie tin cans to the back of the... Camels?
They tied just Mary signs on the back.
I've never heard of that for a wedding, but it sounds very exotic and very romantic to me. So congratulations, Sabrina Dowry. It's been his fiancée since February of 2018. They met in 2017 when he was making his movie The Mountain Between Us. But Sabrina Dowry and Idris Elba are now man and wife, so congratulations to them. And that's all I have.
That's all you have on
the
marriage circuit.
Well, on the showbiz front.
On the showbiz front.
Right now. So when we come back from the break, you know the James Beard Awards, right?
These, oh, yes.
They're considered to be the Academy Awards of the food world. Next, a week from tomorrow, they'll give out the major James Beard Awards for Best Restaurants of the Year and all that. At the Civic Opera House, actually, they'll do that. And yesterday they released some of the top awards for the cookbooks of the year, and I thought some of you might find this interesting. You know, foodies are always interested in the new cookbooks and, you know, what's out there. Let me run down that list from the James Beard Awards when we come back next. WGN. It's getaway day in the desert. The Cubs look to leave behind a W for the D-backs today at 2:30 on WGN-TV Sports. Tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News, I'll be talking with Kelly Clarkson. All of that on the WGN-TV Morning News. We'll look forward to having you with us then. So if you are a foodie fan, then you probably know about the James Beard Awards. They call them the Academy Award of the culinary world. Food awards given out for the best chefs, the best restaurants, but also best cookbooks and so forth. And they announced the names of the 2019 James Beard Foundation Book Awards just yesterday, as a matter of fact. And I know, if you like cooking, probably like me, when you're in a store, you stop and browse through the cookbook section, see what's new, what's out there, see if you can get some new ideas, for different things. And so I'm just going to go down this list of, these are, you know, cookbooks that have come out in the last year. Some are brand new, but cookbooks that you might not be aware of that just won James Beard Awards. For example, in the baking and dessert category, a cookbook called Sukkar, S-U-Q-A-R, Sukkar, Desserts and Sweets from the Modern Middle East, won the James Beard Award for Best Baking and Desserts. Desserts out of the Middle East are fantastic. They're delicious, but elude a lot of American chefs. They just don't know how to make them. And this book will give you a good overview of that. For Best American Cuisine Cookbook, one that's called Between Harlem and Heaven, Afro-Asian American Cooking for Big Nights, Weeknights, and Every Day. Doesn't that sound like a fascinatingly interesting combination of cuisines? Afro-Asian and American Cooking for Big Nights, Weeknights, and Every Day, written by J.J. Johnson, Alexander Smalls, and Veronica Chambers. That just won a James Beard Award. For Best General Cookbook, Milk Street, Tuesday Nights. You know, Christopher Kimball, the guy that he's one of these television chefs. He wears a little bow tie all the time. This was his book that just came out and won a James Beard Award for Best General Cookbook in the category. For Best Health and Special Diet Cookbook, There's one that's called Eat a Little Better by Sam Cass. A lot of these, a lot of the health cookbooks, health and special diet cookbooks, are rehashed information over and over. Sort of, if you've read one, you've read them all. This one at least puts it in a slightly better, more digestible, if you'll excuse the pun in this case, fashion. This one I have taken a look at, and I think you might enjoy this. Eat a Little Better by Sam Cass, a James Beard Award winner. For Best International Cookbook, this one is called Feast, Food of the Islamic World by Anissa Helu. Anissa Helu, Feast, Food from the Islamic World. For Best Photography in a Cookbook, some of these... some cookbooks are like art books with its beautiful photography. And Andrea Fazzari's Tokyo New Wave took the James Beard Award for that. For Best Restaurant and Professional Cookbook, the book that's called Chicken and Charcoal Yakitori Yardbird Hong Kong. It sounds like a variety of chicken recipes in there by Matt Abergel. For a Best Single Subject Cookbook, not sure I'm going to be trying this one. It's called Goat, Cooking and Eating. I assume since it won the single subject category that it must be a cookbook which is strictly goat recipes. Again, I'll wait for one of you to try that, and then you can let me know what you think. That was written by James Wetlore. For Best Vegetable-Focused Cookbook, Eileen Rosen's Saladish. I've always said that there was a shortage of salad cookbooks. More and more we're adding strictly salads. We're going meatless more and more days of the week now. But I've always said I wish there were more cookbooks that simply had salad recipes in them, and this is one of those. Saladish is what it's called, Eileen Rosen. For Best Writing in a Cookbook, Buttermilk Graffiti, A Chef's Journey to Discover America's New Melting Pot Cuisine. Not familiar with that one, but it's written by Edward Lee. And finally, there's one more. There's a cocktail category. Best Beverage Cookbook is called Wine Folly Magnum Edition, written by Madeline Puckett and Justin Hammock. And then, finally, the Cookbook of the Year is also a cocktail cookbook, and it's called Cocktail Codex. Cocktail Codex, Codex, written by Alex Day, Nick Farshlod, David Kaplan, and Devon Tarby. So if you're looking for some new cookbooks, here are some that have just won James Beard Awards and are considered to be among the very best of the year. As I say, the actual James Beard Awards, the major categories, for which there are lots of Chicago restaurants, lots of Chicago chefs nominated, will be given out a week from tomorrow. We'll be covering that, and we'll bring it all to you here on WGN Radio and, of course, also on the WGN TV Morning News. Quick break, and then we're going to get to White Sox-Tigers pregame with Andy Mazur. White Sox baseball is on the way on WGN.